one. Now, the app also provides for oversight into lunch, education, training, and professional development of auditors. And it also enables oversight to credit professional bodies of registered auditors, and also both accountants and registered auditors. And then it provides for registration of auditors or firms of auditors. And then last part of the act also deals with the regulation of the conduct of registered auditors. The current arrangement regarding auditors in terms of before they can register as auditors, that they must complete the public tax examination of now the process to change for this public tax examination is terminated. Now, it's due to the first time candidates that intend to provide the final assessment for qualification as a chartered accountant will now have to write the assessment of professional competence exam, as my colleague has just called an exam, of the Institute of Chartered Accountants and FICA. Now, the assessment of professional competence, the FICA exam, is a general assessment of competence required for chartered accountants, and it's not an assessment of audit competence as such. Therefore, intends to replace this public-private examination with an audit development program that entails that an aspiring auditor that first become a candidate auditor before the registration as an auditor. There is a period under which they will specialize further following the decision under the training contract. And the purpose of that is to consolidate and refine the capabilities developed during the training program. Now, this would occur in a more complex environment, working under a registered auditor, and they will perform more senior roles as they would perform while being a trainee auditor. Now, the intention is that the audit development program must commence in 2015, and it's envisaged that the first candidate auditors will be registered in March of 2015. Now, currently, the Audit Profession Act, the ACA Act, does not regulate candidate auditors or doesn't make provision for such a kind of auditors. They make provision for training of prospective auditors, but not of candidate auditors as such. So the amendment also proposes to authorize everyone to register candidate auditors. And in summary, there will be a period under which before a CA becomes a registered auditor, they will be expected training under a registered auditor before they can become registered as auditors in terms of the Act. So the object of the Act is first to deal with what I've dealt with in the background is to regulate candidate auditors, and then there's also a couple of amendments to update the references to the Companies Act, because the current Auditing Profession Act still refers to the 1973 Act, which was since repealed by the 2008 Act. Now, briefly, the main features of the proposed amendments regarding candidate auditors contained in clauses 1 to 5, 7, 8, 10, 12, and 13 in the bullet and you would have. Now, the first important part is the definition of candidate auditors, and it's indicated that it's individuals who have obtained a professional accountant designation from an accredited professional body, and also in the definition is that they will be serving under the supervision of a registered auditor. So the proposals and amendment boards that we provide various registration, there's also a provision for registration of candidate auditors. And in all they will be under the supervision or under the regulation of the federal, and also when it comes to matters of discipline. And the purpose of this is to protect the public, so then candidate auditors work in public in countries, etc., that will be subject to the conduct rules of urban space conservations by crucial disciplines. And just to reiterate what Tim was indicating earlier on the background, the purpose of providing for Canadian audiences is to provide for more practical exposure to a wide range of United States budgeted auditors, given the complex and relationship that auditors often are in context of a relationship with their clients and not like attorneys, where attorney must always present the interest of the of his client. Now, just the second aspect of the amendment of the Europe's changes to the Companies Act is the change of the definition of Companies Act in Section 1. And then there's also a number of cross-references to the Companies Act. The first one is in Section 38, which deals with the situation where a firm of auditors are registered in terms of the Audit and Profession Act, and then that firm, the company, who has to update that reference. And then the second one is dealing with where a company is a registered audit firm, and there's a requirement that certain information must be indicated on the letterhead, and the letterhead, and we have to amend that, but there's not a similar provision in the current Companies Act. So we provided for that. And then the last amendment related to the Companies Act is that there's a requirement that everyone must conduct inspections of all listed auditors that audit public companies, and the terminology used was called referring to public interest company, which is no longer provided for in the new Companies Act. So those are the amendments contained in the amendment for censorship.
Whatever in the news, try to answer most of the questions and then advocate Pastor will do the rest. Chair, as far as the stakeholders that's registered as auditors and the impact on them on their competency levels is concerned, it does actually assist with the competency levels. I'll answer some of your questions in answering this question as well. The way the professional work is, there is the first, the articleship, the learnership period that must be completed. And what the industry has found is that the gap, as soon as you qualify, is too great, because you might have a chartered accountant that's qualified as a chartered accountant, but that person would not yet be qualified to sign off the financial statements of an organization like an AXA or an Anglo American or something, and it's to protect against that. That's why this period of competency is important. So this is in addition to the articleship. It's not an additional period. It's a period during which you will work. You will be assessed the day after you will be certified that you can sign the financial statements. In other words, during this period, you will no longer be restricted to the limitation of the small salary that an article clerk gets. You will already get the salary that the other people get, but you will not be allowed to sign off the financial statements of large organizations without the second, more experienced person certifying that the work that you have done is correct. So it's just an extra competency that has been added. And during this period, because the Act in the past does not make provision for these kind of candidate auditors, that's why we have to bring the extra legislation in. It's viewed very positively by the industry for precisely the reasons that the Chair has mentioned. We are regarded, in terms of our regulation of the auditing industry, as the number one in the world. It's not just an opinion, it has been certified that we are the best in the world. And it is because we want to protect that we brought in this extra thing. But there's no extra requirement. People do not have to work longer or do anything additional. It's just a period here in which they will be assessed by NPS. So there's a competency assessment that must be signed with. As far as the recognition of other qualifications is concerned, whatever the limitations was in the past will remain, and whatever the advantages was in the past will remain. So this change will not change anything in terms of the qualification that is required or anything. All it means is there's an additional period where you will be supervised before you can actually sign up for financial statements. So whatever qualification you had in the past that will allow you to do that, all of those things remain. If you didn't get that qualification, you wouldn't qualify. If that was the case, then it will remain. If you could qualify with certain other qualifications, then that will also remain. This specific amendment only makes provision for people to be, supervised for a period before they sign financial statements or from their own. Chair, I'll come back to your question about when you can notice it a little bit later. We'll answer that last one. I think I've answered the rest of your questions. The candidate attorney, you will still finish your articles first. After that, during this period, you will not be paid less. You will be paid a normal, what we call a normal salary. It is precisely, this is not the norm in the world over, but that is precisely why we are the number one. We set the norms. We are not the only country, but we are definitely one of very few countries that does it this way. But that is precisely why we are regarded and held in such high regard. I think the other one that we've missed is when did we know about this and why did we bring it to you so late? The importance of the date of the 1st of March is because of the dates that the candidate attorneys start the articleship and finish it, and when they write their final exams, my understanding, and I speak under correction, I'll have to confirm with the CEO of Inva, but my understanding is that they write the last exam normally towards the end of February, and therefore come March, they would have finished their articleship part and then that's when the competency starts. So that's why the relevance of the 1st of March, if my understanding is correct, but I will follow that up for the Chair. Chair, unfortunately, I don't know the answer. I can only beg for forgiveness why we report this to you so late. The consultation with the industry and the people that will be affected has taken place a long time ago. In fact, it's not something that happened in a matter of weeks. It went into months and even years, the consultation process before it was decided. We also knew about the amendments to the Companies Act quite a while ago. It is important for us that this be passed as quickly as possible so that people come first of March, so they're not finding themselves in a period where there's no legislation that covers them. But as for the reason why it was so late, Chair, I can only beg forgiveness. I don't know the answer, unfortunately.
But the process is up to finalising the actual amendments. We've been doing work on a new law, not on these six amendments. So we stopped that, and then we also had to react with others on these amendments, and getting it through our processes and also cabinet took a while. And there were some cabinet meetings that were cancelled where we would have been in Parliament earlier if it were not for that, and that's something that we can't control. But the process is up to that, so that you could have done better than getting it through to Parliament.
A little
separate
issue,
is
that the signal
guards,
I think, is the point. That we would like you to protest before the end of the year to do this kind of program. I mean, the issues about capturing them are slightly different. We are asking 512 and from Bolaloo. But it's not the end of the world. We will deal with it. We will assure you that we will, unless something dramatic happens, then build big holes in the bottle to stop. It's taking very long. In fact, maybe we can even have it out now. We'll speak for the hearing and the assembly of January. I think the first Tuesday is going to be weekend at the end. Now, in the meanwhile, there's nothing wrong with informally cheating the vote, which I think is what we will now do close by close. But before we do that, a few questions. Let me get this clear. A person qualified to be qualified for the degree or whatever it is, then how long do they spend as hospital or like intern, whatever the word is, how many years? They spend 3 years. They get attached to an established CA company, and then they serve 3 years. What's that called, internship? And then after that, that they then become a candidate auditor. Now, during the time they candidate auditor, well, firstly, what's the time between being a candidate auditor and being a fully placed auditor? How long does that take?
The information that we got from Ergo is that they haven't finally decided on the period, but they're looking, for example, at a person completing a complete audit with a registered auditor, and that will depend on the period that audit will take.
How long is the
audit? Doing an audit itself, it's not that long. At the most, if it's a very large organization like a big bank or a mining, it might take 3 months. The idea behind this is only because they have qualified. So they've done the theoretical part, they've done the practical part, they've written the exam, they've passed everything. But sometimes we feel that people have got a theoretical knowledge, and even though you've been exposed to certain parts of everything, we want to see that you do all of those little parts in a complete sense, and this is what this does.
Alright, so basically, just correct to say, on average, from the time you were a candidate auditor, it will take you 3 months to become an auditor. Is that what you said? Because it's just one audit.
Chair, I need to consult with the CEO of Urba. I don't have it with me, but my understanding is that it's a short period because that all they want to do is see that you can do a complete audit from start to finish on your own, which you should be doing. And so you're acting as a normal, as a complete auditor, registered auditor, except under the supervision of a registered auditor, we will count the sign. You know, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, I want some clarity. You know, looking aside, maybe if we publish as a stupid, let's just take a big stupid, right? To explain to us, but I'm explain to me simply and clearly what you say. Are you saying that you qualify as a candidate auditor? All you have to do to become an auditor And if that's the case, well, I'm captured everywhere. Is it one order and no more?
See, I'm not sure if it's one order. There's a specific, it will depend on the size of the order, etc. That's why they haven't determined the full period yet. You know, because some orders are more complicated than others.
Is that the question I was going to ask? If the orders of a football club, it'll take you like how? Because the orders of a big multinational company, I don't know how long it takes, it takes 30 times or 100 times, but so I'm trying to establish there must be some other criteria you use in deciding how you graduate from a candidate auditor to an auditor. And surely you can't say one audit, just to be the nature of the audit and so on. So, how do you expect us to pass a bill if these things are not clear? In other words, are we going to leave it to everybody to decide? I don't follow it, but I don't know what my comrades and colleagues are going to say. I don't think Parliament can just leave it to you because, you know, in the legal fraternity, I don't know much. Here, you might know, I don't know. I don't know why I haven't been there as a bit of a lawyer, but I don't know. You're a lawyer. He just uses the word said all the time. He says, you know, so the lawyers speak like that, as the case may be, and the said organization. All right. So, what I want to ask you is, as I know it, I could be wrong, this is when I was at BGW 30 years ago. You became a lawyer by graduating as a degree lab. Then there was a 2-year period or something. You served as an article clerk, and you were paid very little. They were always born and grown. After that 2 years, or within those 2 years, you wrote some exam, and then you qualified to be opening up your own practice as a lawyer. So surely similar objective criteria should apply. The second thing that worries one is, you're saying, from what I can tell, that a registered auditor will sign off and say so-and-so has done the audit with the fullest confidence. But I think that's subjective thing. You know, I mean, could it be that somebody could not like you and then decide not to sign off on it? I mean, it's subjective criteria. But if you're writing an exam, like a lawyer would presumably, then, you know, it's an objective thing where, well, I'm at the, well, it's reasonably objective. Let's do that. So can you just be clear and precise and let's move on? You're not getting out of it.
Chair, my apologies if I'm not here. The, how do I put it? The certification, there are certain criteria that have I set down. So they are the ultimate person that will certify or not. The registered auditor gives an indicator, you know, they check your work, but then they submit a report to OPA who's got the criteria that they evaluate against. Again, there is a degree of subjectivity in that, but there's a degree of subjectivity in everything that they do. Remember when you do your articles, your immediate superior, who's normally the partner in the audit firm, they have to sign off that you have had exposure to all the areas in any case, and there's a matter of subjectivity in that as well. So we cannot ever completely get away from that subjectivity. The exam is the most important thing that determines whether you get to call yourself a CA or SA or not. The other things are sort of adding on to that to make sure that you had the breadth of experience. Chair, what we'll do is, with your permission, I will check exactly with Erwas, and if necessary, I'll ask them to come and speak to the committee to explain how the period will work. The idea behind it is, it should be, the period is enough to evaluate whether you can operate. It's basically to give the customers, to the public, out their comfort that when you, as a qualified auditor, sign, you've got the experience that you would have looked at anything. And as Chair has rightly mentioned, you know, it cannot be the same for a football club than it is for a big business company. So I don't unfortunately have the theory, but I will need to check that with you, with that budget.
Are you meeting your CAC? Are they coming before us? No. All right. Okay, other questions, members? Yeah, David?
Thank you. I think yourself and honourable to bring this question that is also in my mind, but I would like some clarity with regards to the candidate process and then the first article after article, that's just before the person arrives, his final admission exam. That's what you're saying. The admission exam is always a very, very heavy exam, so it becomes key. is that in that interim period that we're trying to fill a void or gap in terms of encouraging and lifting people into a better salary scale? Is that the intent of the building? Because it's supposed to have the gap in more in terms of remuneration. Is it a practical thing? That I'd like to know. And then the second point is, if it's possible, just your consultation with the cyclist about the institute of charter accounts. I think that could be really important. And this is kind of a letter from Cyclist. Could it certainly change with the whole format in terms of process to become a CDA, which of course has the chairperson and the bold block that has really to be number one and as well, because it's covered with the seniority processes and credibility. So I think this committee will consider these proposals very seriously and I view this in terms of all business strategies. We have to degree that we don't change the approach that are absolutely fundamental and crucial to start by understanding the first and the most standard set for all the people. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. So the studio actually has now a chance because I'm unfortunately my colleague, Dr. Chan, she's not here because he's actually a registered auditor. But I guess to answer your question, the two typical concerns that come up in the context of professional self-regulation from any client point of view are two. One is sort of limiting the supply of qualified individuals into a profession, which sometimes keeps the salary higher than might be desirable and has the economic consequences. And the other is issues around transformation. So I think those are two considerations that the committee might want to take into account. Yeah, so what are the likely implications of this change process for the supply of individuals into the profession? Presumably there will be some kind of decline, otherwise you know, why introduce it? And the other is, you know, if there is productivity, additional productivity and so on, what impact might that have on transformation?
Yeah, so yes, just in terms of the exams, remember a couple of years ago the charter accountant exams changed from one exam that was written over 3 days to two exams. One, the accounting part is written at the start when you start your articles, which is immediately after you finish your degree. The auditing part is normally written at the end of your articles. So this, what we are talking about is a period after you have written your exam, after you've got the qualification. Certain period to make sure that your practical experience has been enough, basically. And my understanding is that you will already be receiving the higher salary, etc., because you have finished your qualification. As far as I can concern, the letter we can easily arrange. This actually came about because of Cyclist's request. Cyclist is the one that initiated the process. Remember, there was a regulator of Cyclist. And so the two of them work very closely together. As far as limiting supply, we do not think it will have an impact because the limiting in this sense is the academic process that you go through. So in other words, if the academic qualification is difficult, passing at the university and writing these exams, you fall out before that, that is the shifting period. This period is just to make sure that you get the practical experience. In terms of the transformation here, I think under correction, but I read somewhere that in the last exam, Urqua had more than 50, it was just over 50% of the candidates that has passed were what were historically called black people. So the transformation is there, but if there is a hindrance as far as transformation is concerned, it will be at the exam. It will not be because of candidate theory, because this is a practical theory, so this will not be used to shift people. It's just to make sure that you've got the right kind of experience to go with your qualification.
There's no hand up there, okay.
Sure, first of all, let me apologize for coming in, and maybe the question I'm going to ask before has already been asked. But one of the things that my approach is that when you are making a case, you've got to be problematized, you have to problematize it and then face it with a solution. Now, I don't know what is the problem statement here. What is the problem that you are solving? Why do we have to raise this that in an auditor? Is it because there is a compelling reason, or is it a gatekeeping kind of thing? And I will tell you what is the problem with our old observation in South Africa. I mean, the financial field, this is the perception, it may not be true. Whether it's assurance sciences, whether it's chartered accountants, whether it's auditors, whether it's whatever, there is a perception that there is gatekeeping of every whatever, of every dimension. And apparently, and this is the perception I think, is that the barrier to entry, especially for black, young, bright kids, becomes very, very, very difficult. Now, I want you to assist me because I wasn't here and I'm really sorry for that. By problematizing is what is the problem with the current situation and what is it that we are solving by introducing this amendment.
Unfortunately, the rules, I mean, the norm here is if a member comes in, you know, that has been a threat. But in view of her invaluable contribution, we'll allow you to do one sentence to reply. I don't think it's fair. You've covered it quite adequately. Whether the problem is, how do you, the problematic is correctly identified, that's another issue. But you've done that. But the other question, so the second is, well, in a way, you put it much more starkly. See, I think we must. In cities, you have to explain that the threat of the word black is referred to people of color. Traditionally, in African Indian culture, from color. Now, the truth is that we know that racism is not very bad. But if you look at the auditing area, Indian folks are in over-represented. Even under the apartheid era, I have no doubt. But Indian seems to have this propensity. No, I'm not here as an Indian, I'm here as a South African, as a soldier. That's my primary identity. But not in people like you are more sophisticated. People out there in the street, they can put it back. I'll tell you that first, you know, the about industry, even with the ANC and the government's views, is that the term black and Indian is accepted. We raised this in 2002. We're the first committee to say, yes, you can think of black, but we want sort of African Indian color and also the gender breakdown. So that 50% plus of the candidates are black. It's not very helpful, but now we are African. But what I do know, when I was Deputy Minister of Costa, we had this issue and we discussed it with Saga. As I recall correctly, there's been quite a leap recently of African qualifications. There's not just a past. We spoke with them. They said, yeah, it's beginning to happen. So I think there is, at least in the auditing profession, some reconsideration of the racial composition. But I also wanted to ask something else, which now escaped me, and that's the past. I think if you online reply on the problematic, and secondly, can you reassure members? We suggest that in a way it's the exam process. But it's not a complete answer. Exam, and it's like you go back to school, right? If people are not trained to orient themselves towards being engineers and actual scientists, or they just like to do so, right? So I know it's a fundamental problem, but can you give more of an answer than you gave in reply to PDF?
Yeah, I'll try my best. As far as the transformation is concerned, I know the industry is trying very hard. Remember, to study to become an accountant, you have to have master the higher grade. And in that field, we are competing with people that want to study for medicine, for engineering, for doctors, for IT people, all of that. So there is a fight to get the right people to go into the industry. It's nothing to do. It is to do with the historical background where certain areas in South Africa do not have enough math speakers, teachers, and so the learners in those areas do not get the access. And that's not something that can be solved here, that's something that must be solved by basic education and those kind of people, of course. But the industry does have a number of programs to try and resolve the problem. As you have rightly said, Abasa is one of the primary ones that is used very much. Say the biggest problem is because of in the past, in the apartheid days, of course, most of the people, or in fact, nearly everybody that qualified was a white male. And when we count the number of children and children, they are included in there. So at the moment, we're standing at something around about 45,000 children and children in South Africa. A lot of those have immigrated, a lot of those have retired, etc. But when you calculate the portion of historical black candidates, it is still very small because of the past. So it will take long to get that right. But if you look at the number of people that qualified during the last year, the historical black people have out-qualified the white male situation. So I think it is being addressed as far as that is concerned. The problem here, Chair, is what we are asking today, we are not the ones that decide how the training should happen and when people should be certified for all those countries. All that has happened is that the industry, being FICA and ERPOC, collectively have worked out that they think that there is a gap that needs to be addressed. And what we saw is that in the Act there is a gap, because this period where they call you a candidate attorney and a candidate auditor has not been covered by the Act. And we were concerned that the pilot and the citizen could be exposed if somebody, and if the financial statement is covered by a candidate auditor, which is not clearly specified in the Act. So what we are trying to do is, wherever it says auditor in this Act, we try to say auditor plus candidate auditor, so that they are covered. So the process of deciding how it should happen, that is done by the stakeholders, the people that work in this area. I don't think the Act that we are asking for here is going to make a difference as far as that is concerned, but I do know it has been widely consulted. You know, so there's general consensus.
Shorter way of amending by adding the expression candidate auditor.
called mine is the Companies Act, where we actually have to remove the reasons called there's no similar provision in the Companies Act. Then clause 10 is again adding the term all canon of auditors. Clause 11 is again the Companies Act amendment. Then clause 12 is dealing with a number of provisions of the Audit Provision Act applying that term with auditors, and those deal with the disciplinary process applying that to candidate auditors. And then clause 13 is an amendment of the long cycle to the Act to add references to candidate auditors. And clause 14 is the
choice. Yeah, so after all the explanation, all you've got here are the, what you have been termed, consequential amendments. You just swap in the word candidate. All of the amendments. Yeah, okay, fine. So, can I suggest a few things? One is that I think we can advertise for a public hearing. I mean, it'll be the first Tuesday of the first week of committee week. Essentially, I might tell you, can we draw out from our annual budget report, the DRRR report, and the NCDPS report, all the things we said we're going to do? Because remember, we said members, once we start saying what quarterly things, we're going to set one. Saturday, Sunday, Christmas Day, New Year's Day. Not May Day, but you know, any other day. So I think members are going to get a sort of a joke when we tell them what the program is. So we can meet on the first Tuesday, and we can vote on the bill by the Wednesday. We can sit through Tuesday, and by the Wednesday we can meet. So we will have your bill. Except that it won't be of much value because it's going to the house. Sorry? I think the third Tuesday of January. Okay. So, and by the Wednesday of that, the next Wednesday, hopefully, will be done. But the first sitting will only be up to consideration because we will only get the vote. You see, what we could do is, as an executive is going, I'm asking more fundamental questions to help us here. Does every vote, no matter how inconsequential it might be, has to be subject to a public hearing? Where does that come from? Is that a norm or a rule? Okay. Will you check it out? No, it's fine. I'm just asking for clarity. Because I know in local government you have to do it because Section 154 requires. But my understanding was from those who are not in the previous before 2009, who are not taken, there is a rule to change for public participation. Nothing we shouldn't do is in terms of saying we can. Okay, that's it. Over to Charles and National Treasury. Oh, I think it's Jacob Jaylor. I want to ask you a question. Is it legally compulsory that every vote, no matter how trivial it might be a minor amendment, right, has to be subjected to a public hearing?
Thank you, Chair. Now, it's not obligatory to subject it to a public hearing, but you must invite the public to have this vote. And then it's for the committee to decide how that participation will work. You must create the opportunity, so the Constitutional Court said in Doctors Club, create the opportunity and inform the public about the content, and if they need to know more information, we give that to them, and that's what Parliament does as a rule. But if there's a very little interest to make submissions on it, you don't have to have a public hearing, it wastes the time. And if there's only one or two people who want to make a written submission, you don't have to force them to make a verbal submission and set a public hearing. So it depends on the amount of interest one gets from the board, and that's how it impacts.
In other words, you think we should advertise for a hearing, but we don't have to have it. Alright, you know what strikes me, colleagues? I didn't know the bill was this for the bill. You know, the reason is, this one is important. It can't be this done. You know, that was the tone of the email we got. Right? Please, it's going to be a big, big sorry. So I thought it was a major consequence. If we can approach county, again, this is, it's a bill, but, you know, it's not highly suggested, then, we would have tried to speak again. I got some major problems, like, you know, first chapter, significant. Now, I want to suggest a way forward. In son-in-law comes to court, but the house will only sit in the middle of February. That is empty will be 2 weeks. So it will sit until the son.
Okay, well, the news are empty will be calling what we can do. Thank you very much. What we'd like from you, firstly, the answer to the questions of how long and so on. And secondly, can you give us a racial breakdown, firstly, of auditors as a whole, chartered accountants as a whole, and also in the last 3 years, who's been qualified? And break it down into African Indian color, the black component. You can bring those assistance to us. Thank you. Over to Saad. And your NTs are here. Until this duty has already been processed by the NTOP, is that right? Is that how it matters?
The communications of the equation will be done through
directly between customer operations through the central coordination units, which the NS provides the central coordination units to receive this exchange of communication. And the request must be in writing. It must be accompanied by information that the member state, the request member state would be useful. If there's any request that would require a specific methodology or specific procedures to be followed, that would be subject to the domestic law of that requested party. And there's also the option to provide you information on own issues. So there's no request to access the information to the citizen saying there's a potential customs offense being committed or the person will make committed. Article 4 is on information for application, and here we can extend information on the number of issues, the range of methods. We say we could exchange on new customs enforcement techniques, we could exchange on new trends that is happening within the committed customs offenses. We exchange on the goods known to the subject of customs offenses, persons known to be involved in customs offenses. Application of rules concerning the origin of the goods. We could exchange an assessment of customs duties and determinations of customs relatives and determinations. Any other data that may assist the customs in risk assessment. And whether we could also ask member states whether goods imported were lawfully exported from that member state or whether goods exported from us were lawfully imported into that member state. Article 7 and 8 is the automatic and advanced information. This particularly is very important for us because it helps with giving advanced information on an automatic basis to member states. We can also request an advanced and automatic. Automatic here refers to the regular transmission of information without having to ask or without having to ask a member state for information. And this will help us with identifying high-risk consignments before the goods arrive in the Republic or even before the persons arrive in the Republic. And that timely risk assessment will help us with to take the movement of legitimate trade across our borders, of course. Article 10 deals with technical assistance. This is where members may provide each other with helping each other by, you know, exchanging customer officials and experts, specialized training and assistance that we can provide each other, exchange of professional scientific and technical data relating to customer procedures. We could also extend the computerization of our automation of our customs procedures, best practices, or the certification measures that we have tested and worked, and the simplification of customs procedures. Article 17 is a little bit, this is the one that is for surveillance. Now, upon request, the customs administration can ask that another member state maintain special surveillance over the movements of persons suspected in contravening customs law. Suspected storage of movements and goods and means of payment, premises used for storing goods of illicit trade, means of transport suspected of use of contravening customs law. Now, this can only be provided within the scope of the requested administration's competence and available resources. If someone has the resource or the competence to do this, then he will be unable to fulfill this obligation. But there is Article 12 deals with control deliveries, and this is where your customs administrations may cooperate in detecting customs offenses related to narcotic drugs, your psychotropic substances, and used in the manufacturing process involved. And intercepted shipments containing such goods can then be allowed to continue intact or worthless items being removed. Now, if the customs administration isn't authorized by international law to carry out a controlled delivery, it must approach the agency with the airline jurisdiction to conduct a controlled delivery and cooperate with that agency to carry it out operation or to transfer the case to that agency. Article 13 is experts and witnesses, where we can exchange our experts and witnesses, provided that we request for appearance, and that request must specify the case to be heard, and the capacity and use of officials is to be presented or is to present. The right of the suit and extradition. It allows the officials to request assistance in the pursuit of an apprehension of persons observed in the act of committing or participating in a customs offense.
But will the system be subject to conditions imposed by the requested member state? And method of extradition will remain the subject of the domestic law and extradition treaties and other agreements. And the procedure governing conditions shall still be currently valid. But this does not give, it was just to apprehend the person and hand over the person to the, within the territory, and then the extradition laws will then take care of the rest of it. So it's not a case of you superseding the extradition law. Cross-border surveillance, where it's necessary, you have domestic surveillance of persons involved in criminal offences can continue in each other's territory, but again, this is subject to a request being made and authorization is received from the requested administration, including any conditions before surveillance may cross any border. COVID investigations, we say where necessary, you may have COVID investigations of customs, but may get authorized by requested, but again, this is subject to the domestic laws and the procedures in the territory where COVID investigations is authorized. If SAR doesn't have the competence or the authority, then or better by law, then they cannot provide assistance. It should hand over to the agency who have that authority. Joint control and investigation team does empower the South member states to have joint investigation teams or control teams that can help, that can help them detect and prevent other offenses that require the simultaneous and coordinated activity. This will give them the authority to act in terms of the decision. And the operation are made subject to the domestic laws of and procedures of the country where the activities are being carried out. Article 22, user information. This is your standard confidentiality, and saying that you can only use information for the purpose intended. If you want to use it for any other purpose, then it is prescribed in this agreement. So you need the consent of the member state. And you can ask for the other authorization could be for criminal investigations, prosecution of proceedings, but for that you need the consent of the requested member state. And the administration providing the information may specify any terms and conditions for any other use. And again, this is subject to the basic laws of the administration of the receiving member state. 23 is confidentiality. Treated to be confidential and afforded protection in terms of relevant information laws. Personal data exchange are possible only after members have agreed in an arrangement to provide protection at least in line with the basic laws of the supply state. And the country administration may use information documents in terms of the edits as evidence before court, but obviously before you can do that, you need the consent in order to use this. Any personal data exchange can only be done between your country administration with prior approval required before providing to other authorities. You can't give it to the police unless you ask the country administration the consent of the part of the police. The receiving administration to notify how data was used. They need to tell you how the data was used, what was the results of things. And they shall keep the data only for the time necessary to achieve the intended purpose. Records must be kept of all exchanges and of personal data. Security measures must be in place to protect the personal data. And then you, as a member state, you attract the liabilities pertaining to the misuse of personal data. If you misuse the personal data, then you attract the liability that a person may assume before court in terms of. Exemptions, there are exemptions where the administration may refuse or may subject information exchange to certain conditions where it infringes the sovereignty laws or treaty obligations, where it infringes security, public policy or essential national interest, where it involves a violation of industrial, commercial and professional secrecy, and where it's inconsistent with the domestic laws and administrative provisions. Then it's
Revenue
think last year in the public domain, it is picked up a few months later and so on. So some of the business there, I know a bit about these issues. We may really arrange them and we can keep up doing different things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
I think that there is an attitude that things we dispute, but I just wanted to know if there is an article that is specifically with a risk associated with this cross-border transaction and so forth, especially when it comes to issues of, because it moves beyond just the customs issues, it also moves to even issues of trust. There are people who will probably be transporting certain things that are they put their mouth in some way, and you know, if they something that deals with a specific thing that leads to how that manages their risk.
Thank you, sir. I will attempt to ask this question, but most of these questions are not technically related to the particular area. In particular, the first question of how to create a disbursement formula, I would definitely know nothing about it. I know that the annex that is dealing with the formula and so forth, but I think that's affect the coordination of treasury, because it's not something that on which customs or even such particularly is competent on. But I'm hoping that we can maybe get that answer from, if I take it back maybe to the administration, maybe then National Treasury could answer that particular question. On how do we make this to the double declaration agreement? This is again a question that I'm unable to answer on, because I'm particularly involved in the customs environment of this. But this is it only typically because of customs cooperation and various offences, customs offences particularly. We now need to create a cooperation framework. So it's not far removed, but it is a bit removed from the double declaration agreement. So I'm unfortunately won't be able to associate it with that question as well. When last was the analysis done on the impact of SACO, again I think I would be the most incompetent person to announce it, or even bring you a message about it. I think as the chair I could mention, I think maybe the Minister of Trade and Industry could assist, and even the Minister of Finance could assist with that question. In terms of the whether it is still if whether SACO is effective or not, I wouldn't be able to assist with that. The only thing I know is SACO works very well when it comes to customs cooperation. That's as far as my involvement is. So I think we could ask the question, and we can ask maybe, I can take it back to the administration to find out on that. Whether SACO is of course, and for various reasons, and the realization of all these objectives, that would be the Minister of Trade and Industry of Genesis. Any risk associated, as far as the risk, when it comes to risk associated with health, even when we are customs offense, we could share information with other administration to say there is a consignment, and we are suspecting that consignment is what pose a health risk to your country, and then we can share that information with the member states, or even the members of all initiatives, or whether one is quit. How the member state will deal with in terms of within the health environment and the health administration, that is a method that I cannot pronounce. But I know that once we receive information as a consignment that is with a health issue involved, we will get our health departments involved in order to let them know this consignment is on its way. There might be a risk that we need to mitigate, and how do we mitigate this? We will detain the consignment, stop detaining the consignment, and we'll then direct it to the relevant agency for whatever action they need to take. So, sorry, but there couldn't be any more helpful than this. Thank you, John.
I don't mean fairness. Where does SACO come to deal with any agreement? Unless
it's very important that when some elected presentation of this nature is made for us, they need to cover the finance aspects as well, so that you know what you are. I mean, I would have loved to know what's in it for us financially, as a country, you know. As a state, I'm in the draft and I'm a new member of this committee related to speaking as a member of the government.
Did you know there was an election this year? In the 2014. In case you didn't, I didn't know that we all knew that we had apart from there. But I agree with you. Eric, can you throw the attention to Sandy that we want the financial implications put out in the field? Okay. So while we're waiting, we have a good one. Ladies. And then they say, ladies, did it say men today?
I don't know.
Can we take that up for the young people? Can we make it an eye to look at? What was it you said to them?
Basically, you know, what we can do is, we are going to meet next year in the first committee, and we will do some ideas of what we're going to do. First, we finish the poll.
First, we finish the poll, right? Then we look at a quarterly report. Then we look at our decisions we took in the annual report, the budget review, the DRR. And all the things we said, whether we said the quarterly reports, they will appear in that team as well. Then the 20th registration will have come to us. Then we have to do a little study tour sometime in the first quarter, where we'll have to go to ingredient bits and KSE. We should go to the Financial Services Board, as well as any body or two. We should do that together. Cross-border, yeah, let's move on. We can do it in the second quarter. But it means what we can do is plan for it itself. I think the main focus is going to turn to state inflation. It's going to be very intense process.
Yeah.
So we should keep that off the ground here. When last did the committee visit the cross-border post? First time. Oh, but doesn't go. Okay. All right, that'll be the second quarter then. Just before we start the second quarter, the first week of the committee week. South Africa. So we go. Yeah, okay. Give you both. We can go to the toilet if you like.
It was very weak voting.
held us up by 9 minutes. But let me stand in recognition of the so we thank you. Can you sit with us? Who cares? We've got our corner. We don't care.
Then you will have the pleasure of holding here.